Hello, I'm author Carnigaldin. Welcome to the next instalment of Wolf of the Plains.
Temujin took his find by the ear and prodded it into the circle of his family. There are two herders a few miles to the west of here, he said. They are alone. Did they see you? Olan said suddenly. Temujin looked at her. No. I took this one when they rode behind a hill. It was too good a chance to ignore. They will look for it and find your tracks, Olan said. You may have brought them here after you. Temujin sighed. He did not have the strength for another argument. Before his mother could protest, he sat down by the fire and drew his knife. We have to eat to live. If they find us, we will kill them. He saw his mother's face become cold again. We need each other, Temujin said. If I was wrong to kill my brother, it does not change that. The kid goat bleated and tried to make a dash for a gap between Holon and Temujin. Holon reached out and gripped it around the neck, and Temujin saw that she was crying in the firelight. What should I say to you, Temujin? She murmured. The kid was warm, and she buried her face in its coat as it cried out and struggled. You have torn my heart out, and perhaps I do not care about whatever is left. You care about the others, though. We need you to live through the winter, or we're all finished, Temujin said. He straightened his back as he spoke, and his yellow eyes seemed to shine in the light of the flames. Holan nodded to herself as she fondled the ears of the little goat. She had seen two of her brothers die from a plague. She had heard warriors scream from wounds that could not be healed. She had walked with death all her life, and perhaps she could even lose a son and survive it as a mother of wolves. She reached for her knife. She had made birch bark bowls for the camp while her sons were hunting, and she tossed one to Kasar and Kachyun. Temujin scrambled forward to take another, and then there were only two of the crude containers left. And Holon turned sad eyes on her last son. Take a bowl, Temujin, she said after a time. The blood will give you strength. He lowered his head on hearing the words, knowing that he would be allowed to stay, and his hands were shaking as he took his bowl and held it out with the others. Holon took a firmer grip on the goat before jamming in the blade and cutting the veins in its neck. Blood poured over her hands, and the boys jostled each other to catch it before it was wasted. The goat continued to struggle as they filled the bowls and drank the hot liquid, smacking their lips and feeling it reach into their bones, easing the aches. When the flow was just a trickle, Holon held the limp animal in one hand and patiently filled her own bowl. With his face pressed against the frozen white grass, Temujin stared down at the two herdsmen. They slept on their backs, wrapped in padded deals with their arms drawn into the sleeves. His brothers lay on their bellies at his side, the frost seeping into their bones. The night was perfectly still. The huddled gathering of sleeping animals and men were oblivious to those who watched and hungered. All three boys carried bows and knives, and there was no lightness in their expressions as they judged their chances. We can't get any closer, Kasar whispered. Temujin frowned as he considered the problem. The herdsmen would be hard men, well able to survive on their own. They would have bows close by. They would be used to leaping up and killing a wolf as it tried to steal a lamb. It would make no difference if the prey was three boys. Temujin swallowed, glaring down at the peaceful scene. The men had a pony hobbled nearby, and Temujin yearned to have it. It would mean he could hunt far further away, dragging even large prey behind him. If it was a mare, it might have milk, and his tongue tasted the sourness in memory. The men would have any number of useful things, and winter was coming. Without mutton fat to protect them, how long would they last? Can you see the dogs? Temujin murmured. No one replied. The animals would be lying with their tails tucked in against the cold, impossible to spot. He hated the thought of it, but there was no choice. The herdsman had to die for his family to survive. He took a deep breath. I have the best bow. I will walk to them and kill the first man to rise. You come behind and shoot at the dogs when they go for me, understood? In the moonlight, he could see how nervous his brothers were as they nodded. Temujin rose silently to his feet and padded towards the sleeping men. Closer and closer, hearing his own breath harshly in his ears. At 30 paces, the dark shape leapt up and howled. Another dog lunged towards him, barking as it closed. Temujin cried out in fear, desperately trying to keep his focus on the herdsman. They came out of sleep with a jerk, scrambling to their feet just as Temujin loosed his first shaft. His arrow punched into the man's chest, dropping him back to one knee. Temujin heard him calling out in pain and saw the second man coming up with a strung bow. The sheep and goats bleated in panic, running madly into the darkness. Temujin raced to beat the herdsman to the shot. His second shaft was in his waistband and he tugged at it, cursing as the head snagged. The herdsman fitted his own shaft with the smooth confidence of a warrior, and Temujin knew a moment of despair. He turned as one of the dogs leapt at his throat, falling backwards as the herdsman's arrow hummed over his head. Temujin cried out in fear as the dog's teeth closed on his arm, and then Kassara's shaft hammered through its neck, and the snarling savagery was cut off. Temujin had dropped his bow, and he saw the herdsman was calmly fitting a new shaft to his string. Worse, the one who had been downed was staggering back to his feet. He too had found a bow. Temujin yanked at his arrow and it came free. He pressed it to the string with shaking hands. Where was the other dog? Kachian's arrow took the standing herdsman high under his chin. For a moment he stood there before death took him and he collapsed. The one Temujin had wounded was scrabbling with his own bow, crying out in pain as he tried to draw it. Temujin felt his heart settle, knowing the battle was won. Kassar and Kachian came to his shoulder. The second dog? Temujin murmured. Kachian could not draw his eyes away from the struggling man. I killed it. Temujin clapped his brother on the back in thanks. Then let us finish this. Temujin wiped sweat from his eyes as he tied the last cross piece of wood to make a small corral for their sheep and goats to give birth. Kassar and Kachian were practicing their archery nearby, and Temujin watched them, thinking back to the first months, when death and the winter stalked every step. The family had struggled simply to live through that winter and the next. But by the third, they had enough felt to make 2 small gares, and the sight of them never failed to raise Temujin's spirits. Temujin had traded for another pony, and in the spring of the 4th year, they had weapons and meat, and were camped close enough to woods to hide from a force they could not handle. In his gare there was a bow the equal of anything his father had owned, and when the brothers were not working, they spent every moment honing their skills with weapons. A cool breeze came across the green plains, and Temujin closed his eyes, enjoying it. He could hear his mother in the gare singing to Temujie and little Temulin. He smiled at the sound. He did not often find peace, even in fragments. Though they traded with single herdsmen and their families, it had come as a surprise to find there was another society beneath the great tribes grazing across the land. Some of them had been banished for crimes. Others had been born without the protection of a Khan. They were a wary people, and Temujin had dealt with them only to survive. To one born in a Khan's gare, they were still tribeless men and women, beneath contempt. Temujin did not enjoy being one of their number, and his brothers shared the same frustration. That was what Eluk had taken from them. Not just their birthright, but the tribe, the great family that protected each other and made life bearable. He heard Kachion shout with pleasure, and opened his eyes to see a shaft in the very centre of the target. Temujin's gaze automatically scanned the land around them. They could never be safe. Though it was possible to live beneath the notice of the great tribes, as other wanderer families did, it could all be taken from them by a single raiding party. In his own dreams, Temujin still thought of Borte, though the Olkunut had vanished from the plains. Even if he had found them, they would have scorned a ragged wanderer. He did not have a sword, nor the means to barter for one. But the boys rode for miles around their little camp, and they talked to the wanderers and listened for news. The Olkunut had been sighted in the first days of spring, and Temujin had been restless ever since. He saw Kachian glance toward the horizon and stiffened. Riders! Kachian yelled to their mother. They all turned as she appeared at the door of the closest gare. How many? 3, Kachian said. Do we run? You have prepared for this, Temujin, Olun said softly. The choice is yours. Temujin took a deep breath. The men could be an advance party for many more. Get into the woods, all of you. Take the bows and anything you can carry. The 3 warriors rode cautiously into the tiny camp. They could hear the bleating of goats and sheep, but otherwise the morning was strangely still, and they could all feel the pressure of unseen eyes. The small gares and the rickety corral lay by a stream at the bottom of a wooded hill. Toluwi had seen the running figures disappear into the trees, and he was careful to dismount so his pony's bulk hid him. Under their deals, Basan and Unagen wore leather armour like his own, a layer that would protect their chests even against a direct attack. Toluwi signalled to the others to check the gares. It was Basan who led his mare into the shadow of the gare, using her to block the sight of him ducking inside. Toluwi and Unagen scanned the tree line. There were heavy banks of thornbush tied amongst the trunks, forcing any pursuit to come on foot. The ground had been prepared by someone who had expected a raid, and they had chosen well. To reach the trees, the bondsmen would have to cross 30 paces of open ground, and that could be a bloody business. Toluwi frowned. Basan entered the second gear and came out, shaking his head. Toluwi clenched his fist, then spread 3 fingers in a sharp jab. Basan and Unagen nodded and waited for his lead. Toluwi felt strong. In his leather armour, only the most powerful arrow shot could hurt him. He raised his fist, and the 3 men broke into a run, splitting apart as they reached the open ground. Toluwi caught a flicker of movement and threw himself into a wrestler's roll, coming up fast as something hummed over his head. The other 2 men jinked as they closed the gap, but Toluwi had seen by then that there was no way through the first line of trees. Every gap had been closed by the great rolls of thorns, and Toluwi found himself hesitating. Before he could make a decision, an arrow punched into his chest, staggering him. The pain was colossal, but he ignored it. The 3 wolves came to a stop in the worst possible position. Yet, as archers, each of them could take a bird on the wing, and for their enemies to shoot, they had to show themselves, if only for an instant. If they did, one of the bondsmen would send a shaft back in the flick of an eye. Toluwi took 2 slow paces to his right as Basan and Unagen spread out to his left. The only sound was the panting of men in fear of their lives, slowly coming under control. Then, on impulse, Toluwi called out to the hidden enemy. "My name is Toluwi of the Wolves, bondsman to Iluk, who was once bondsman to Yesuge. There is no need to fight. If you grant us guest rights, we will go back to the gears and I will tell you my messages." He waited for a response, though he did not really expect them to give themselves away so easily. "We cannot stand here all day," Basan murmured. Toluwi hissed back. "You would let them run us off." Only Basan's lips moved to respond. "Now we know they are alive, we should take the news back to the Khan. Perhaps he will have fresh orders." Toluwi turned his head a fraction to answer, and that movement almost killed him. He saw a boy rise and pull smoothly back on an arrow. For Toluwi, the world roared in his ears as he released his own shaft at the moment he was sent stumbling by another blow to his chest, just below the throat. The shot had been rushed, he realized over the pain. He heard Unagen shoot into the bushes, and Toluwi roared in anger as he rose, setting another arrow to the string. Basan fired. They heard no cry of pain, and Toluwi glanced to his left to see Unagen on the ground, a shaft through his throat. Toluwi cursed, swinging his bent bow back and forth in a fury. "You have asked for a hard death, and I will give it to you," he shouted, his pride and fury kept in there, desperate to punish those who dared to attack him. His deal bristled with arrows, and he snapped off 2 shafts with quick jerks of his hands. "I hit one," Basan said. Temujin crouched behind the barrier of thorns. It had been his arrow that took Unagen in the throat, and that gave him a savage satisfaction, though it had still been a shock to see bondsmen of the Wolves in their camp. Iluk had chosen his best warriors, and Temujin's chest felt tight with pride that they had downed one of them. Temujin remembered Toluwi as a boy, even then one of the strongest children in the Wolf encampment. Now he was a massive warrior, full of strength and arrogance. As slowly as he could, Temujin turned his head to look over to where Katyun had taken position. Sweat trickled down his forehead. At any moment he expected the movement to attract Basan's sharp gaze and an arrow to plunge through the thorns at him. When Temujin caught sight of his brother, he blinked in distress. The younger boy's eyes were wide in pain and shock. A shaft had struck right through his thigh. Katyun had remembered the cold face on this morning where death had come for them. He sat like a statue. Despite his control, the feathers of the shaft quivered, and Temujin could hear the faint movement of the leaves. Toluwi would see, Temujin thought. He would fire another shaft that would kill. Temujin turned his head back with infinite slowness until Tolui and Basan could be seen. The standoff could not last, Temujin realized. He had to move before Tolui reached the same conclusion and came at them from another route. Temujin knew what he had to do, but he was afraid. He closed his eyes for a moment and summoned the will. Basan and Tolui had to be drawn away before they could find Katjun and finish him. Temujin began to crawl backwards, still keeping an eye on the intruders. When he had covered 20 alds, he used a birch to hide his movement as he rose to his feet. He could no longer see either man and would have to shoot from memory. He sent up a prayer to the Sky Father, then sent the shaft through to where Tolui had been standing. Tolui heard the arrow in the fraction of time it took to break through the leaves. His own shaft was released before the other reached him, tearing a long scratch down his forearm. He yelled in pain. Then he saw a figure running through the trees, and his anger overrode his caution. "Get after him!" he shouted to Basan. They ran together to the east, looking for a way into the trees. Temujin ran until his legs were weak, his skin whipped by 1,000 branches. The worst part had been crossing the bare hilltop. Temujin had been forced almost to a walk to watch the arrows coming and jerk his tired body out of the way. They had gained on him, but then he had found himself staggering among trees again and had gone on, his vision blurring. He lost his bow when it snagged firmly on a whip of briars. He cursed himself as he staggered on through the brush, looking for somewhere to hide, the fear thick in his throat. He had not planned on being pursued for miles, and it was pointless wishing he had prepared a cache of weapons or a deadfall. He could only go on until his heart burst or an arrow found his back. A sudden hollow sent him out of sight, and he dodged through a stand of ancient birch. The briars were as high as a man here, and he plunged into them without thinking, scrabbling madly against the scratching thorns to shove himself further and further into their gloomy protection. He was desperate and close to panic, but when the daylight had receded, he curled into a ball and held as still as he could. His lungs screamed for air as he heard Tolui and Basan crash past, calling to each other. They would not go far before they returned to search for him, he was certain. For a little time, he had thought of nothing but darkness and safety, like a hunted animal. "He's hiding," Tolui said, frighteningly close. "We know you can hear us, Temujin," Tolui called, panting. Temujin lay with his cheek pressed against ancient leaves. He could escape them in the dark, but that would not be for many hours. Temujin heard Tolui murmur to Basan, "He's here. Search it all." Temujin's searing breath had eased a fraction, but his heart still pounded, and he could barely keep himself from panting aloud. He heard footsteps crunching through the thorns and leaves. There was a patch of light through to the outside, and to his horror, Temujin saw a booted foot cross the light. Then it was blotted out completely as a face peered in, the eyes widening as they saw him looking back, his teeth bared like a wild dog. For a long, long moment, he and Basan stared at each other. Then the bondsman vanished. "I can't see him," Basan called, moving away. Temujin felt tears gather, and over the roar of blood in his ears, he could suddenly feel all the aches his battered body had taken in the chase. Basan had been loyal to Yesuge, and the relief was shattering. He heard Tolui's voice calling in the distance, and for a long time he was alone. The sun sank, and darkness came early deep in the hill of briars. Then exhaustion stole Temujin's awareness in a sudden blow, and he slept. He woke to see a flicker of yellow flame moving across his field of vision. He saw Tolui's face in its golden light, grim and tired. "I will tear the skin off you if you don't show yourself," Tolui shouted. "If you make me search all night, I'll beat you bloody." The brambles quivered in the darkness, and Temujin's heart pounded in fear again as flames crackled in the thorns. Tolui had pushed the torch deep into the patch. Temujin felt a hand grip his ankle like iron. He reached for his knife as he was dragged out into the open. He hardly saw the blow coming before he was knocked into a darker world.